From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the pages of Politico. That's always dangerous, but it was that place where a longtime conservative commentator offered a kind of plea to Democrats. Don't blow this. Charlie Sykes is a conservative who thinks that President Trump deserves to lose in 2020, but Sykes is concerned that Democrats will nominate someone who can't win a general election. Sykes writes, quote, Trump could still win re-election because he has one essential dynamic working in his favor, Democrats. Trump's numbers are unmovable, but Democrats, yours are not. He doesn't need to win this thing. He needs for you to lose it. There are millions of swing voters who regard Trump as an abomination, but might vote for him again if they think you are scarier, more extreme, more dangerous, or just annoyingly out of touch, end quote. The piece is a long version of the view that says something like, Democrats ought to play it safe and nominate Joe Biden. Is that true? Or does the party have a field of contenders who can win in 2020? President Trump says he'll beat whoever is nominated. Well, 10 Democrats on stage tonight for a debate, 10 more tomorrow. Who knows, maybe another 70 or so by the weekend. I said last hour, if a Democrat can bake a pan of brownies without burning it, they think they should run for president this year. But they're going to have to narrow down the field soon. And the new polls are pretty interesting. This hour, a chance to understand different points of view from Democrats who would like a new face in the White House in January of 2021. Or sooner. My guests this hour include, and hello to all of the following. Paul Hippolyte is a local political strategist. Paul, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Welcome to Nicole Hushler-Ray, who is the executive vice chair of the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Nicole, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Larry Knox is political and community coordinator with 1199 SEIU. Larry, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Elaine Spall is a member of Rochester City Council for a little while longer. Hi, Elaine.
A little while longer. You're a bit snarky today, I thought, about that brownie comment, but that's okay.
Oh, you Democrats are so sensitive. And Douglas Jay is a political writer for Balloon Juice. Doug, welcome back to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, so I'm going to start just by asking for some opening thoughts, and then largely I'm just going to get out of the room and let you all sort of fight. We'll probably take some phone calls and emails, but let's go around the table. Nicole Hushler-Ray, really what Charlie Sykes is saying, what George Will are saying, and Democrats love when they get lectured by people like George Will and Charlie Sykes, but the bottom line is what they're saying is they're not fans of this president, but they want centrists to be catered to. They think that there's still a lot of voters in the middle, and that the real America, quote, real America, is not on Twitter. And I want to hear where you think that they may be right or wrong on that and what you'd like to see happen.
Sure. I mean, look, I think candidates down the ballot emphasize social media a little bit too much sometimes. There's nothing that beats going door-to-door, meeting voters face-to-face. However, the last couple of presidential elections tell us that it has to be taken into consideration. It's highly targeted. Who doesn't want the chance to get their message to go viral, right? The one thing that I agree with out of some of the points are a little weak, but generally I agree with the fact that we have to do more messaging that, I mean, the Democratic Party is supposed to be the most inclusive party, right? And, I disagree with some of my more moderate friends who say we get into identity politics too much. I don't think it's so much as we emphasize identity politics too much. I think it's that we don't find a message that brings all of these identities together, because there are plenty of issues that face everyday Americans that across the spectrum of identity politics, right? And we failed at doing that last time around. And I'm not sure that we're doing it properly this time around just yet. We'll see in the debates, I think, tonight and tomorrow.
Realistically, of the 20 who are going to be on the debate stage, how many could beat Donald Trump?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Are you a play it safe and go with Joe Biden person?
That isn't my personal play it safe. So I would like to, at this point, I think all but a few, and I don't want to be too polarizing and say who I'm really anti, but I do not think that Joe Biden is the safe answer.
Okay, that's interesting. And by the way, listeners, I've said on this program, I'm not a big fan of horse race politics. I'm glad that Mark Halperin is off the stage and will hopefully never come back.
he does have a new website.
Thanks a lot, Doug. I know, we're trying to avoid that. I will say this is not necessarily just about horse race or where the polls are. This is about understanding where Americans may be and what the kinds of politics that impact Americans and voters are. So it's not just meant to be horse race politics. It's about what Democrats think the country needs and what the country will vote for. So let's turn to Elaine Spall.
So you know,
I'm selling you out here. You've told me about Joe Biden.
I know,
in the past.
But I want to tell you something.
Are you
First
changing?
Of all, it's possible that our candidate's not on the stage either tonight or tomorrow night. So I'm just saying.
What are you talking about?
No, I just want to be.
Who?
I just want to say it. I just want to. I think her name is Oprah. I'm just saying. No, okay. So I'm just teasing. But we're going to give up on that. Listen.
Goodness, that was a joke.
I want to tell you something.
She's being serious.
The first person who makes voters, particularly young and African-American and Hispanic voters, inspired to get off the couch and out of the cafe and put down their phones and their lattes and come to vote.
You left out avocado toasting.
Avocado toasting may be the ones who win. And I'll tell you why. When people feel disenfranchised, the first Obama campaign was so telling. I am a lawyer. I was doing those judicial affidavits. People came who had never voted before. It was inspirational. Mm-hmm. When Hillary and Donald Trump ran, they stayed home. Why? When Democrats vote, when the voter get out, Democrats win. We did not vote. We've got to get the vote. And guess what? Forget about all those other states. You got to go to
Hillary
Michigan.
Didn't Hillary Clinton get more votes than Barack Obama?
She did, but she didn't get enough.
Well,
she didn't get enough in places.
Vote.
She won the popular vote. We got to get everything. We got to wrap it all up. I'm going to tell you that I still think, if I have to pick from the stage, I think it has to.
Just say it, Elaine.
I know. I don't love him in terms of being
say
inspired,
it.
But I think he is probably the safest bet.
You think it has to be Biden?
I think right now it has to be Biden. I think Adam Schiff from California would be my pick if I could fly to California and talk him into it. I think he's
Elaine.
Smart. He's liberal. He's not on the stage.
You
I
got
know.
Like five qualified women running, and you're a woman in politics, and it's
and
fascinating.
Let me tell you about misogyny. Let me tell you about misogyny in this country. Kamala Harris is amazing. Is she going to win? I don't know. Oprah's a woman, by the way, so don't give me that
stuff. That's enough about Oprah.
Yeah.
Well, she's also one of the richest women in the world. So,
But she will inspire those Republican women. She will. She has a base. It's crazy. And she's a TV star. Guess what?
I don't like doing the poll thing, but the newest national poll is Biden 24, and the new second place holder nationally is Elizabeth Warren at 18. Elizabeth, do you think Elizabeth Warren can win the national election?
I don't.
You don't think Elizabeth Warren?
I want to know why.
I don't. You want her to lie?
No, I want to know why.
Because I think she is still going to frighten people. And I think we have voters who are still. Listen, does she have a platform that
Finally
could.
More than
could,
Trump?
Well, yeah, no, well, come on. We're just talking. That's a whole other conversation.
That's
I'm saying,
voters.
Can she win with those unsettled people? Listen, would I prefer Elizabeth Warren over Joe Biden if I thought some of her policies we could actually have happen with the work that I do, with the people that I work with at Center? Absolutely.
But you're
young
giving
people,
up on that.
But I'm worried. I'm worried. And, you know, I just also want to tell you something. We've got to get to Michigan and Pennsylvania. There's some things we know we have to do that we did not do. Who is inspirational? Elizabeth Warren will inspire a whole bunch of people. I don't know if she'll inspire those unsettled. I don't really want Trump. I'm not happy with that, but I want to go in a different direction. Do I want to go that far?
But his numbers are dropping, particularly in key states. Well, and if anybody was polarizing, I mean, I voted for Hillary, but
yes,
she was seen as a very polarizing candidate.
Yes,
I don't think for a second she's that Elizabeth Warren is more polarizing than she is. And Trump's numbers are dropping, particularly in key states.
You know, I what can I tell you? I'm just, I have this
sure.
this sense. And,
and,
I
and by the way, here's the reason I reached out to Elaine. Elaine is the non-Twitter Joe Biden voter right now, who is a lot. I mean, Doug, there's a lot of talk about like this idea that the American electorate.
Sound old for a second.
No,
okay, that's okay.
No, but I am. Age.
Right.
It's about understanding that not every Democratic primary voter is on Twitter.
Right.
And that for now, Joe Biden holding these numbers should tell us something. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I remember in 2016, right, we made this smart, solid centrist choice, not the scary left-wing person. Of course, we crushed Trump. So let's just try that again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm someone who voted for Hillary in the primaries, too. But I think this idea, there's many different ways of looking at electability. I would like to think that one of the ways of testing electability is to see how people actually do during a campaign, not just what Politico thinks of them before the first debate happens. That doesn't seem to me like it wouldn't be my preferred metric for measuring, measuring electability.
But hold on for one second, because you were the last time we talked about centrism. you had a lot to say about how it annoys you, this idea of centrism.
Right. I find just about everything about the idea of centrism, the way centrism is discussed, very, very irritating. I think that it's very artificial. It's this sort of triangulating.
But a lot
thing.
Of voters self-identify that. They'll tell you in polls, oh, I want bipartisanship. Oh, I want centrism.
But they obviously don't vote that way.
But don't move. Here's Democrats don't move to the middle. I don't know what your name is because you told me it was Tom, but now it's Doug. Anyway, doesn't matter. So I'm confused. But don't move to the middle, Democrats. They don't love us. They're not going to love us. They're not going to. Right. So be careful. Be careful of doing that as well.
But Joe Biden is supposed to be the middle person, and that's who you said you want.
You know what? Listen, here's the deal.
He hates me.
And I only have six more months. One very quick thing. The most important thing right now is that whoever is chosen, let's say it's Elizabeth Warren, we have to have a pinky swear pledge that the other 19 people are going to stand behind her and bring their voters. Can they do that for Elizabeth Warren? If they can, I think we got a chance.
Well, this is where I want to hear from Paul and Larry.
That's what's so important.
Tulsi Gabbard might be a hard sell on that one.
Yeah, Tulsi. So I mean to laugh at Tulsi Gabbard. I know there's people who support her. But, Larry, you told me before the program even began that for the Elizabeth Warren doubters, they had to call who?
Oh, Scott.
Scott Brown?
Scott Brown. I mean, that was her race when she ran in Massachusetts. He was popular. He was good-looking. He was moderate. He won off the health care vote. Massachusetts, he has a Republican governor still, again, right now. And she beat him by 8%, and she talked a lot of policy in that race. And, you know, never run for office before. You know, was a professor, an academic. You know, it was not, you know, and this
was... What was the turnout in the cities?
She won. I mean, she won.
What was it turned out in the
city? I don't live in Massachusetts, but I know she won by handily against a very good candidate. I'm in a state that has a lot of those centrist voters, and she didn't run like a super centrist campaign. So I think it's good that we're having this show, but again, like the first vote isn't until like next year.
Right.
And campaigns start earlier and earlier all the time. So we let these people debate, fight it out, you know, who falls off, who doesn't, but it's so early. And I think the candidates are just going to improve and show more distinction. Trump's just going to do worse and worse and worse.
Now, excuse me. Polling at this point is always reflective of the general election outcome. Go talk to President Kaine.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's amazing how much changes. And that's partially why we're doing this right now, because on the eve of these debates, there's all this, you know, there's all this media buzz that sort of annoys me. And should it be Biden or not? And when you look at the coverage of it, I don't think Joe Biden deserves more coverage than Amy Klobuchar or anybody else. And I understand why certain things get more coverage. I have seen people like Paul Hippolyte say, whatever the case may be, you don't want to see infighting this time. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Let me change that. I am okay with infighting in terms of the candidates going back and forth with their policies and what they want.
They got to compare policies.
What I don't want is other Democrats going after each other and tearing each other down in the process.
Well, what does that look like? Distinguish for me, as this process starts for your party, what the difference is between tough looking at policy versus something that's over the line.
Something that's over the line is this person is racist for whatever reason, and that's why we can't vote for them. Or this person voted for something 50 years ago, 30 years ago. They've now changed, good example, the crime bill, where a lot of folks
kind
voted
of,
for that.
But here's the thing, Paul. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought this up. I am not at all a fan of the idea that people cannot change or evolve in politics. But Joe Biden is trying to make it seem like now, well, I was a reluctant supporter, or I was asked to, as opposed to a full-throated supporter of the crime bill, and someone who made a lot of remarks that would be anathema today.
This wasn't about Joe Biden, though. That comment was about everyone.
But I don't get
everyone.
Why can't the man stand up and say, I'm embarrassed about the things I said, and I'm proud of the way that I've changed.
Right.
As opposed to, whoa,
humility.
I wasn't quite that guy.
And he should, but I've heard that about Elizabeth Warren supporters, or people that don't like her, saying, well, she used to be a Republican. People that don't like Kamala Harris,
but
whatever.
But Elizabeth Warren, and now it sounds like people are kind of standing for her. I don't mean to do that, but she has said at length, here's why I was a conservative and here's why I'm not.
She's wrote right. about that.
She's written extensively. That's very different than Biden kind of saying, well, I wasn't that much of a supporter.
I think what Paul just said, but the way that the candidates, especially Cory Booker and some others, responded to Biden, they didn't call him a racist, but they used a lot of other terms and analogies about why he was wrong, why they're disappointed in his stance on that and his response, you know, to some of the issues that have come up. So I think that's a good level as opposed to
is that fair
calling
Cory
him
Booker
Little Marco or something like that, like Trump did. Mm-hmm.
But is that fair, Larry? What Cory Booker said about Biden does not cross the line for you.
Yeah, he talked to him privately and publicly and said what he said at Cory, and I think that's very fair.
It sounds like it crossed the line to you, Paul.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
Because it implies that Joe Biden was doing things or is
his a racist. His comments about segregation, the segregationist was bad. It was a bad comment.
Yeah.
So
okay.
he should have gotten called out for that. But that's different than someone, as I said, this is on and on. This is, I have people that will say, I'll never vote for Kamala Harris because she used to be a prosecutor. I mean, there's just nutty things that it's just opponents of that have a preferred candidate go after folks that they think are threats to them.
Right.
And that's the part that I don't like. But in terms of candidates going after each other or questioning each other's policy positions
debating.
And all of that, yeah, that's great. That's healthy. We need that.
When it comes to Kamala Harris as a prosecutor, the thing that I have seen the most often shared is that clip from 2010 in San Francisco where she was talking about her time as AG, where she was laughing about a policy that would have incarcerated parents of students who don't show up in school.
That was problematic.
I think that's a very fair thing to go back and say, listen, if you would make those same comments today, I don't want you to be the nominee. But if you haven't, I want to hear why. That's fair, right? That's not over the line.
That's not over the line. And also, I don't know the context. So I don't want to prejudge. But also, sometimes things are just taken out of context. Or my guess is that she doesn't think it's funny to incarcerate people.
Actually,
That's my guess.
Part of her follow-up was that nobody was ever actually incarcerated. And there was a lot of opposition to what she had done. She said she grew and learned from that. But those are good discussions to have.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I mean, they've had those without tearing into each other. But again, it's like, let's give them a few months of doing that to see, for the country to see these are people that have differences but are, morally upstanding as opposed to Trump, who's going to do what horrible things are going to happen in September of this year that we don't even know about that the country is going to be against. That picture on the front page of the New York Times today of that father and his dead girl, daughter in the water, those are the kind of things that Trump can have no response to. He's not morally or emotionally or mentally capable of responding to that. And as Democrats are making those kind of differences, making those kind of obvious, changes that need to be made because of things that are on the front page, that's how we can move. I think every candidate on that stage is able to do that. And Trump is not able to counter that.
I think that's the simple move to solving the infighting issue. The second we start to go down that path of let's talk about what this person did 20 years ago, which they should have humility and own their changes along the way. And personally, I have issues with the whole concept of flip-flopping. It's one thing if a candidate runs as a Democrat and then, within a couple years of winning, switches parties and does something like that. We should be encouraging them to have their views changing over the years and the decades, right? Because the world is changing. The political perception in general is changing. There are some things that, of course, are really hard to explain away. But if you don't, Biden was shooting himself in the foot by not just approaching all of these things with humility. I think a problem with politics that kind of upholds the patriarchy really is putting out this perception that you're strong no matter what, right? That you don't make any mistakes. And humility goes a long way nowadays, especially in the era of Trump. So I think, to recenter on the infighting, as soon as we start to go down that path, make the contrast Trump, right? Bring him into the conversation because Lord knows he shouldn't be commenting on a lot of the things that he is, but he's a supreme narcissist. He's going to comment on everything, especially if he knows people don't want him to.
Nicole is saying some really, really, of course, because she's fabulous. when you are voting, when you are voting for multiple bills, a lot of legislation, certainly, at city council, which is nothing like we're talking about in terms of level, you might vote for 50 pieces of legislation in a night. And often you're not there or you're busy. And one of the things that I think is so helpful for this debate is every single vote is going to have a record. And if you've never been elected as Trump had no record, right? Now he's got a record as, and we'll talk about, all the the things he's done that are horrible. When you have a record over a voting record over a very long time, how do you come to terms with exactly what Nicole is? You're learning, you're changing. Don't say, oh, well, you know, I that wasn't what I meant, or I was reaching across the aisle, which actually I don't think was across, so that's another whole thing. You know what? You made missteps. And so, you know, now I'm looking at this face over here that Evan's making at me, because now it sounds like Joe Biden's record is terrible. But the point is, you have got to say, here's who I am today, and here's how I got here.
Yes, whether I don't care what his record is.
Exactly. But I think that when you're constantly being, your record is being talked about, you need to figure that out and align it. And whether Cory Booker, who I'm a huge fan, by the way, I just don't know, you know, people say that he was too strident during the Supreme Court hearings, and I'm a huge fan. I would love to see him take some powerful position, because I think he's bright and he's authentic. But I don't think he took a cheap shot at all. But I think what it should have done with Joe Biden, he should have sat with them. And together, Joe should have said, you know, thank you, because here's what I've learned and here's what we're going to do differently. Now, whether it seems like blowing smoke and it matters, this level of humility is gone from politics, and it has got to be there. And one of the things we know for sure is there's at least 20 people with huge egos right now. And I don't know why a person wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to run for president, when they have had, you know, maybe their family thought they would be good, or their state thought they would be good. I don't get that. That's
who shouldn't be running. Tell me the field, what the field should be.
I think they should somehow minimize the divisions and come together and say, there's going to be four of us. We're going to figure this out. I mean, certainly Elizabeth Warren has proven that she deserves to be there.
July. It's barely July.
I know.
A lot of these people are very qualified, too.
It's not that
people we barely heard of, like Hickenlooper or someone like that, has a strong record, and in a different race would be viewed as a very good candidate.
Right.
I don't think we should be mocking very many of, maybe one or two, but
no,
I think
I'm not mocking.
They're pretty serious candidates.
Evan may have mocked, so I didn't mock anybody. I'm just saying that it's...
Who was it? Joe Sestak, or who declared the other day for Pennsylvania, the 21st candidate, and his child is on stage, and all of the blood had drained from her face? And that girl was America. That girl was just like, what is going on here?
Exhausting. She didn't know why she was there, and her father just announced.
Yes!
She was like, wait a second.
What is happening here?
I thought, was I going to a birthday party?
Yes.
No, I'm not saying that people don't have the right to do that at all, but at some point, we're going to have to come together. And I want to know, is Cory Booker going to stand behind Elizabeth Warren? Is Kamala Harris going to stand behind Joe Biden? Is Beato still in?
Beto O'Rourke.
I like to call him Beato because it sounds like a prayer. O'Rourke, is he still in?
He's writing poetry on
the road. What about young Joe Kennedy? Is he in yet? I mean, I just think
no.
That,
no, well, he's the only one. He's the only Democrat.
Hopefully Beto will be going back to Texas to run for that Senate seat. Yeah.
No. MJ Hager is phenomenal.
Oh.
And she's running, and she's going to be incredible. She's the fighter pilot that
not to reduce it to social
Congress
media. She had one of the greatest political ads I've ever seen.
And it's out again.
Yeah.
Doors, an attack on McConnell, which we were talking about earlier. Okay. She's phenomenal, and I think she's better than Beto.
Okay, so let me just ask Paul one quick follow-up, and then we're going to turn to the phones here. Right now, are you okay with 20 candidates on stage over two nights? I mean, Elaine wants it already narrowed here.
I am a fan of democracy.
Woo!
In every case, in every state or form.
Like.
Everyone needs to run, because if for no other reason, you keep people like me employed. Thank you so much.
Well, listen, I disagree.
Do not vilify me. I'm a fan of democracy, too. I just want us to somehow stop hurting each other and come together at some point. Maybe it's too early, Larry. I get that. I just am, you know, we have to help. We have to support each other at some point.
I think people are traumatized.
Maybe it's too soon.
By the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
This all of us going through that. But all of everybody that's on that stage for both nights is, it shouldn't be like this. And it's, you know, misogyny is part of the reason, are more likable than Hillary. They're all, you know, any the top tier candidates, those things that Trump had, where people just had a distaste for Hillary for the wrong reasons, but they were there.
Yeah, yeah.
None of these candidates have.
Yeah.
And Biden may have it more than others, but he's got a better, easier personality where he,
mm-hmm.
and he's
yes.
a man, so yep. it's easier yeah. for him yeah. to get past that. I mean, if you look at, you know, I mean, the Democrats have always, you know, even when we lose the election, for president. We've been getting more votes. Same thing happened to Gore, although he technically won. But, you know, same thing happened, you know, with Hillary. And if you look to, you know, when Clinton won, he was more likable. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, more likable. Right. John Kerry, whose campaign I worked on in Ohio, wasn't as likable, you know.
Right.
And I think compared to Trump, all of our candidates, and of course, there should be a policy and issues, but that presentation for people that are, you know, are voters that aren't high information voters, they're just going off who to have a beer with.
But hold on, I'm just going to say one thing here, and then we're going to take our break, and then we're going to just load up phone calls here. On the subject of likability, I hear you. I mean, it makes my skin crawl thinking about reducing electoral politics to likability, especially with the way that women have an unfair shake with that. But for those who have talked about Elizabeth Warren in that way, has anybody watched this campaign?
Well, they're not. The polls and her, they're talking about it with her, but that's not the actual what's happening with how she's being seen. I mean, she's raising good money then. She's really doing good in her spinning out these policies.
Tone.
She's taking, getting attention that she wasn't getting when people thought she was dead, you know, after a month after her announcement. So I think everybody who keeps on saying that, that's diminishing return on that because her poll numbers are going up. And again, I'm not standing for her, like you said earlier, but she's showing you could talk policy in a lot of detail.
That was the old song. You can't talk policy and be likable. And nobody talks policy more than her.
And she's,
you can when you put it in layman's terms, right? And connected
to
the average American voter.
And
that's
a real skill.
That's
a real skill.
And the last thing, too, is that we've seen from election to election, we like to swing back and forth. So once,
I think
because of a president that really does not understand policy, I think it's fair to say that that's not an unfair attack on him. I'm not sure if he's capable of talking about policy in any sensible way. And so to have the pendulum swing back, to have a bookie, to have someone that I think at her last rally she was going on by the end of it and saying, who knew that we were all political nerds here? Because she was just going on and on about her in-depth policy positions. But I think it's refreshing now to see someone that's that serious.
All right, so a question. I'll pose it to Doug, then we're going to get our break, and we'll just flood it with feedback because people have a lot to say on this. To Paul's point on the policy side, has that hurt the Buttigiegian surge? That's a term I just coined. Because he sort of came out of the gates and was very much, he was saying yes to all the media interviews. I think Liz Smith was helping with that. But at the same time, he didn't have a whole lot in terms of the way of policy. And I understand why. He wanted to articulate values before policy. But has that hurt while Elizabeth Warren's on the cover of Time magazine with a plan for that?
Yeah, I think it has hurt. I mean, I think Mayor Pete's idea was, I speak Norwegian, so I'm smart. Just trust me. And I think
that's a little unfair, isn't it?
Not really. I don't think so. But and I think Elizabeth Warren's was.
I didn't want to mock anybody.
I'm not against him. I'm not against him. I'm against that strategy of presenting himself. Whereas Elizabeth Warren has been. Trust me, because essentially any problem that you name, I have a plan for it. And I think that voters do want that. I think that voters do want real plans. And I think even if they don't understand the details of Elizabeth Warren's plans, even if they get bored listening to it, just creating a sense that you really do have firm plans, and you know you're not just there to go on and schmooze with Morning Joe and talk about all the languages you speak, I think that does create a sense of trust in voters.
Whereas someone like Kamala Harris, I've seen her on multiple occasions be asked tough questions about issues, and she likes to say, that's definitely something we should talk about. Well, we're talking about it. You're already talking about it, Senator Harris.
That's called a pivot.
Yes. No, it's a dodge is what that is in my terms.
Until she reads up on it.
Yes. But I think that's why I do think you're seeing the polls go so far where they are for Elizabeth Warren rising as sort of the top contender with Joe Biden. It's early. And the point is, the debates are going to solve everything in the next two nights for the Democrats. If you're listening now, we're going to take your phone calls after our only break. And as we go to break, who are all these people in the studio? It's packed in here. Nicole Hushlerae is the executive vice chair of the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Paul Hippolyte is a local political strategist. Doug Jay is a political writer for Balloon Juice. Elaine Spall is a member of Rochester City Council. Larry Knox is a political and community coordinator with 1199 SEIU. And we'll get your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we sit down with several people who have run for office multiple times in the past and until Tuesday had always lost, but finally on Tuesday broke through with their first electoral victories, including Rachel Barnhart and Mary Lupien. They're going to talk about the importance of persistence in politics, what it's like to run and lose, and what their plans are now that they've won an election. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls, and I'm going to start with Sam in Rochester. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, you guys was talking about Biden and Cory Booker and what Joe Biden had said. I just want to know why y'all wasting valuable television time talking about something that's non-essential. And what we ought to be talking about is how the president that we have now is destroying America, and not only destroying America, but our allies who used to work with us are don't even want to work with us, and some of them don't even want to talk to us. And you should be asking the question of how they're going to fix that, rather than talking about something that doesn't make any sense. And so what if Joe Biden said that some of those people back then was his friends? So you have other black people who were involved with other groups who were not good people. So Cory Booker shouldn't even be asking that question. And as a matter of fact, if Cory Booker asked that question in the debate, I'm not even going to look at him to vote for him, not let alone think about voting for him. And we know who Joe Biden is. We know Joe Biden is a moral man. We know Joe Biden is a man of class, man of respect. We know who he is. So why would we waste television, valuable television time and radio time, discussing something like that? And Cory Booker should know better than that.
All right. Well, Sam, I get you. I hear you. Let me just jump in and say, Sam is reflecting a viewpoint that we certainly hear from a significant number of voters. I would only say, from my perspective, here's why those questions matter. We still have unequal outcomes. Let me change the way, because I don't want Jordan Peterson calling me, ever. It's not about unequal outcomes. We have unequal opportunity in this country for people of color, and we have a system that still offers all kinds of advantage for people in different positions. And so when you have someone who might be the president who is maybe downplaying their own role in whether it's busing or whether it's crime bills, I think those questions are fair when the state of the country is what it is, to understand, have they actually changed? That goes back to what Nicole said. Have you really learned? Do you have the humility? Are you willing to own it? Yeah. But Nicole, Sam does not want those questions, and he does not want Cory Booker asking those questions either.
I agree and disagree. Sam makes some really good points. I mean, it comes back to that contrast point, right? When we get kind of caught up in this cloud of infighting on the Democrat side, bring it back to Donald Trump, right? Like it sort of clears the air and really boils it down to what matters on the issues, less of personality conflicts, less, the likability issue and how much sexism is associated with that. So, and to your point, we do have to be talking about those things, right? Turnout needs to be incredible next year. And it can't just, Trump is a motivating factor, but for somebody who works in Democratic politics every single day, in order to do my job, I have to turn that off a little bit. I have to tune out of that because it's a distraction, quite frankly. It is a distraction that allows GOP members of Congress to go by unscathed and to do, you know, say and do whatever they want. It's a gift to the GOP. So I do think there's a balance there. But ultimately, you know, he's a supreme narcissist, and the more attention you give him, the more, right, that's just going to sort of cloud things. So I do think it needs to be a little bit of both.
When Nicole said part of that, I think that connection to what Joe, when Joe tried to give the context for his campaign, they said about you have to work with people you disagree with, and that was the bigger context. If I'm president, I'll be able to work with McConnell. And that was what Joe's bigger point, which I think is also wrong, because one of the biggest problems, you know, Trump's horrible. McConnell is worse in many ways because he's deliberately incompetently undermining our country in many ways. So I think that bigger point Joe was trying to make of if I'm here, that I can work with this Republican Senate. That was the point he was trying to make. But I think, and this is from what Cory Booker has said, that's also wrong in that, you know, McConnell, you know, when Trump, President Obama got elected, McConnell said, you know, my goal the next 4 years is to get him unelected, you know, not wanting to work in policy. This is where the Republican Party is even before Trump got elected. So I think for Sam's concern about why that was brought up, why Cory kind of challenged Biden on that, it wasn't just on, you know, working with segregation. It was that idea of you can work with people and then I can work with people that have no interest at all in actually, you know, governing and doing policy in many occasions.
All right, let me, can I disagree just ahead, slightly? Paul. And this goes back to the point I was making earlier about civility, which is I understand Sam's point, and I agree that all of these issues we're talking about are fairly minor. And we have this thing in politics sometimes, and this goes back to the Twitter politics, where someone did one thing or said something inartfully, and it's like, this person is terrible. Mm-hmm. I will never vote for them. They're just as bad as Trump. And it's just, that's nonsense. And I'm agreeing with him. That's nonsense. And we should have more generosity to other folks and try to put ourselves in their shoes. The Kamala Harris situation where I said, what was the context there? I haven't seen that video, but my guess is
that it's a good question.
She's not actually happy that people go to jail. That's my guess. I believe that she's a decent person, and so if we can extend that gratitude to all the other candidates, we'll have a much kinder and gentler and better debate.
Okay, let's get Alexander in Rochester next. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, Evan. How are you? Thank you so much for hosting this program. I just wanted to offer one quick question for the panel. It seems to me that for the purpose of this conversation, people are defining centrism to be a more conservative view versus what reflects popular support of policies such as expansion of Medicare, mm-hmm. expansion of Social Security, the rise in the minimum wage, things that have popular support versus things that are more conservative. So I was hoping to get everyone's response on that. Thank you.
Yeah, so that actually, this is a really important point as we define as journalists what centrism is. Sometimes we talk about centrism, and I think this is what annoys Doug, is this idea of anything that's just bipartisan, as opposed to...
Or in the middle, no matter how, you know... If Trump wants to nuke, you know, the world, and Hillary doesn't want to nuke anybody, we should nuke half the world. That kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, let's find the halfway point.
Yeah, and so that kind of centrism annoys people like Doug Jay from Balloon Juice. But what the caller's pointing out is the actual political center may be something entirely different, and it may favor, you know, Damon Linker, one of Doug's favorite writers, said that. The new political center is actually socially more conservative, a little more conservative, but it's also really liberal on the policy side. And as
the
opposed
to
what libertarians
example
say.
Of that. I mean, my union, yeah. SCIU, were very much early on in getting engaged in the fight for 15, not just for our members, but across the country. At the beginning, it was like, oh, it's this leftist union doing this. And now that's the country is there, you know, and that's not a centrist policy, although, you know, others would think it is. That's the majority of the country by a large percentage, you know, is following an income inequality, thinking $15 at a minimum should be higher. You know, that the federal minimum wage is still way too low. But, you know, these fights and
that's definitionally centrist now, though, Larry. That's what you're saying is when the majority of people.
Well, I think centrist has this idea that Republicans or others don't support it or the majority don't. I think it's centrist. I think when in presidential campaigns, centrist means the middle and doesn't mean a vast majority of the country. As in, so, and many of these policy issues, like healthcare reform, like income inequality, especially when it comes to, you know, wages, that's the majority view of the country. And I when you say that, that's not the same as centrist. And I think that's an example of us being careful, you know, as Democrats who are looking at these candidates, not thinking or not realizing that, you know, Trump, he has, and the Republican Party has a very loud minority of the country, you know. And that's all he's talking to. And that's not just policy-wise and voting-wise. So I think this idea of the centrist and go to the center, our views, you know, those candidates on stage, the vast majority of them, their policies are what the majority of the country wants. Just not because they're same, because that's what polling says and that's what, you know, policy says and when things are enacted and people support it.
So I think also sometimes centrists are defined as party loyalist, and I think that's a mistake. And that is more of a political descriptor than a policy approach, and we have to clear that up. So the question will be, does the conversation tonight amongst the first 10 and then the second 10 actually clarify where people stand? And I love what Larry is saying. You know, there are times when we can educate people. I mean, I will tell you that there are small businesses in town, and I run a large one at the Center for Youth, where I stopped thinking about paying people $15 as I just could never do it, as I have to do it. And so you're also what looks like maybe a leftist, like way out there policy, becomes now the way we begin to think about the way we treat people. And why is that important? Because it means people matter. These are exactly the issues that matter. The candidate who makes us feel like they matter, like people matter. I don't know why Hillary couldn't make people feel like they matter. I don't have any I don't know what it is. Is it a DNA? Is it a, you know, the way she looks? Who knows why? I will tell you, for young people, particularly those with hard lives, who are the most compassionate people I know, if you want their vote, I'm thinking about the young people I serve, 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are homeless, who are working in our schools, who are trying to figure this out. They want someone who makes them feel like they matter, like their issues matter. They're not going to care about some of the things that we all care about. How do we find that person? Maybe it's not, I don't know who. You've got me so confused, Evan, I don't know if I'm going to vote at all. I'm just like, no, I'm just teasing. I'm
just
teasing.
Student loan debt, 18 to 45-year-olds care about that. So that, so, you know,
what did you, I saw, I'm sorry, I didn't hear what
the
you said.
The student loan debt. I mean,
yeah.
The policies,
exactly.
What,
exactly. Yeah. You know, there are some real issues, and certainly Elizabeth Warren has been one of the fire starters around those. And we have to continue to ask what matters. People will vote. You got to get them out of the couch and out of the cafes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Some emails here. Angela says, "I'll make this clear as a Democrat. Here's who I'm supporting." No, period, white, period, male, period. All right, Paul Hippolyte, you had something to say about this during the break. And because Angela is not the only one who is expressing a desire for the party to choose someone who is not a white male. What would you say to voters like Angela?
For the primary, so there's a difference between the primary and the general election. But for the primary, I'm one of those voters that say that I want to vote for a woman. I think there are plenty of qualified women running for office. And it's a shame, I was going to say, a darn shame that in this country that we have not elected a woman as president. And I think symbolically is important, but also we've screwed things up as men for so long. It's time to give women a chance.
Oh, I love you.
But when it comes to the general, then, if it's a man.
Whoever wins, wins. Whoever wins a Democratic
as a Democrat,
primary,
you're saying.
I will do whatever I can to
defeat
Trump.
So would you tell Angela, you understand where she is now, but she's got to kind of try to get on board no matter what happens?
Absolutely. And I think she probably agrees with that.
Nicole Hushlerae, what do you think?
So I only agree with that because there are qualified, capable women, right? I think making that statement. So I'm someone who is very much so fighting the inequality piece within politics. And I see on a regular basis how dangerous that blanket statement is, because then you get people like racist Rob in wherever, Corning, calling in saying things like, well, why does it that shouldn't be the qualifying factor. There are qualifying men out there. It shouldn't just be that you're a woman. It should matter that you're qualified. And that's the piece, right? It's not women or bust. It's qualified women or bust.
But your point is there are plenty of qualified women this time
yes.
around.
Yes. Yes. I'm careful with that phrase because it is, or that statement, because it is a bit polarizing and hurts the cause, I think, in terms of getting more equality in politics.
But you understand the sentiment.
Yes.
Whereas
100%.
Elaine Spall does not think woman can win.
Because I think misogyny is so sadly, by the way, I think it's tragic, really alive and well, and look at some of the things we're seeing and hearing. But I'm with Paul. I'm with Paul on this. I'm going to stick with Paul. We're sharing a mic. I'm going to stick with Paul. We're in it for the long game. We got a long game here, and I think along the path we have got to embrace and give it our best shot with women who are so deeply qualified. But you know what? Hillary was qualified, right? I mean, would we all agree? Maybe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Hillary was qualified, so that
qualified,
you know, being,
but polarizing, right?
But
she's
being
uniquely different than any other presidential candidate in history.
Yeah, no, I agree. But she was qualified, so you know that's not enough. Which is kind of sad because for many men, I'm just going to say this, for the other gender, there's more than one, but that particular gender, being qualified means nothing. I mean, you don't have to be qualified, clearly, right?
But why are we putting more emphasis on that voting population? What we know is that women of color are the most reliable Democratic voters out there.
Absolutely.
So I think,
who's going to energize them? That's the question.
Right, and polls are showing that Biden isn't necessarily doing that just yet.
I just got an email from a listener saying they do want another one who's not on the stage in the next two nights to be there, and that's Stacey Abrams, which I suspect
she'll be there in the future.
I think so too,
and I don't think we should give up. I like Stacey Abrams, you know, but what is she waiting? You know, like 8 years or 4 years.
I don't know.
She probably just saw there were other qualified women out there, so she didn't feel. You know, I'd like to see her run for a statewide position.
Let me get Carl in Brockport next on the phone. Go ahead, Carl.
Hi. Thanks, Evan, for this wonderful discussion, and thank you all to the panelists. At the risk of derailing this very lively and very interesting conversation, I would just like to step back, if I could, for a moment and remind us all that whoever the Democrats elect, that person is not going to be winning the White House unless the Democrats have a ground game. Without a ground game, you are going to lose. Okay? Donald Trump is a minority president. This so-called coalition of white voters that he put together was a losing coalition. The only reason he won was because of voter suppression in a handful of key states.
And white women. Listen,
I understand the point you're making. I want a couple of our guests to kind of weigh in. I'm going to start with Doug. I want to go to Larry. We can talk about voter suppression, but we can also talk about the fact that has been pointed out here. Nobody stopped Hillary Clinton from going to Wisconsin, from going to Ohio, from going to Michigan.
From going to Pennsylvania.
They were viewed as safe states because Democrats had won them by a lot, mm-hmm. right, in the previous elections. And I saw this really interesting chart of internal polling from the Hillary campaign, and they could see like the last 10 days numbers cratering in those states, and they did pour in a lot more ad money at the end.
At the last minute.
So they didn't see it coming. I mean, nobody's all seeing.
But whoever the nominee is, they're not going to make
not going to make that mistake again. And actually, I think that's really good. I think someone brought this up earlier, but this I think is the really important thing to think about in this election is that the popular vote doesn't mean anything. Mm, nothing.
That's what we should be.
Popular vote is not something we should even be looking at or thinking about. Yeah. There's seven states. The Democrats, there's basically seven swing states. I think if the Democrats win three of them, they win. If they win fewer than three of them, they lose. And that's really all.
That's
that
the whole election.
That's the entire election.
Right.
Interesting. Larry.
Yeah. So after the campaign in the following year, I don't know why I did this because I read a bunch of books about the campaign from people that were, the books that came out the following year, Hillary's book, people that worked in the campaigns. And one of the common themes was the killer campaigns over reliance on analytics, where they were really, as opposed to putting like people on the ground, knocking on doors, and they were so data driven and they were so disconnected from people on the field and who are always complaining, were yelling back up, we need 40 bodies to do door knocking. It's like, oh no, we got these 5 target EDs, we got these 8 people on this block, if they get out, you got it. A massive mistake was made by their campaign, and she talked about a lot of people that were in the campaign. I heard it, even internally, during that there was this concern they were over-reliant on analytics and this data-driven, which is important in politics. They took it way too far. Every presidential candidate, especially the major ones, have learned from that mistake. They realize in those states and every other places, you need to have people knocking on doors that are from the neighborhood, mm-hmm. Starting off with what Dean had done and then Kerry and Obama had done going forward, and Hillary's campaign kind of didn't have that to the degree that it needed to. I think that was a lesson learned. That internal polling, they saw they were behind those last 10 days. They didn't have the bodies. I mean, there were some places in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, they didn't have lit that was needed to get door to door. And that's like true. And so that can never happen again. I don't think it would happen again. And like you said, Trump's not trying to grow his base at all. So we do what we need to do in those states and maybe other states of Florida and also, and talk about those issues. And, I go back to what we saw on the front page of the New York Times and whatever, and the rape allegation against our president, which normally is front page news, the newest one, concentrating on those, the moral and spiritual and mental, deficiencies of him and how we're bringing a different vision to the country. All those candidates need to make sure that, and I think the voters in our country really will see that difference if those candidates work on that, no matter who it is.
All right, last question of the hour, and I'm going to cite Michael, who emails to say, I'm a lifelong Democrat. The progressives shoot themselves in the foot with something like reparations. That's what Michael says as a progressive. Well, in Charlie Sykes' piece for Politico, he cites George Will saying that Democrats can lose the election by talking about things like abolishing the Electoral College, packing the Supreme Court, reparations for slavery. Are those issues, Nicole, go ahead.
Sorry, no, no.
No, no, no. Michael, as a lifelong Democrat, is agreeing with George Will, saying he doesn't want to hear the candidates talk about this.
But reparations isn't a check, which is maybe what Michael's thinking. But reparations is not a check, is where was this, the conversation that we had.
We ought to have a good discussion on reparations.
I agree with that. But also, it's early. It's early. It's the primary. We have a long way to go. But now is the time to talk about all these issues, because we know that in the general elections, the candidates do pivot back and talk about mainstream. So they'll talk about healthcare, they'll talk about whatever. But some of these issues, they won't ever get into the mainstream unless you start talking about it at some point. Yep. And that is an issue that needs to be talked about. The Green New Deal or severe, intense, extreme positions or new ideas, policy positions on climate change, that's important. Talking about eliminating student debt, that's important. Again, mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen with a Republican Senate. It won't even happen if the Democrats take over and have 55 seats in the Senate.
But it's something
you have to start having the conversation right now. Mm-hmm. And 10 years, 5 years from now, some of those things will get into the mainstream.
And for so reparations, for Michael, this watch Ta-Nehisi Coates testimony, it's like probably 10 minutes maybe. It's on YouTube.
Less.
Okay. Just watch the testimony. Maybe you'll feel differently.
Nicole Hushleray, 30 seconds. What did you learn from local primaries last night?
Oh gosh, I wasn't prepared for that. A lot of things. I am someone who, and this I'm speaking on personal opinion here. I think one thing that we do in the establishment across the country that really hurts us and widens this divide between establishment and the progressive new movement is not making things accessible, and I think that we're doing a good job of that locally, and I think last night showed that there were winners across the board.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Should we do this again?
Yes.
I don't know. I guess we should.
Let's do it in 6 months.
next week.
Next week.
Nicole Hushleray is the Executive Vice Chair of the Monroe County Democratic Committee. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Larry Knox is a Political and Community Coordinator with 1199 SEIU. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Elaine Spall is a member of Rochester City Council for now. Thank you, Elaine. Paul Hippolyte is a local political strategist for always. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, and congratulations to everyone last night.
And Doug Jay is a political writer for Balloon Juice. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Don volunteering, Gary Puttup behind the glass, Megan Mack also engineering and producing, because powerful women run the world. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.